The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With Nissan Subscribe and Drive. No deposit, no compromise, no fuss. Find out more at nissan.ie.
As you will know and have seen, because it's been unavoidable for the last couple of days, the tragic news and tragic death of the television presenter Caroline Flack at the age of 40. Now, tributes have been pouring in for the last few days. You heard more on our news bulletin just there. There are so many elements to this: the role of social media, the role of tabloid journalism, as well as the actual medical or clinical factors that go into somebody making the decision to take their own life. We have a panel today who have plenty to say on this. Harry McCann, who's the founder of Transter.ie and is director of the Digital Youth Council, media commentator Roy Greenslade, and in studio we're joined by Cindy O'Connor, who is the director of Athena and of course was formerly the chief clinical officer with Pieta House for 13 years. Thank you all very much for joining us. Roy, I'm going to start with you if you don't mind, because she's obviously English and this has become a huge story and is causing a huge furore in English media circles. Now, I believe you didn't know much about Caroline Flack or know anything at all. Is that right?
Absolutely right. Yeah, I just happen to be one of those people. And there are a lot of us, I think, probably not the majority, who's never watched Love Island, never seen Strictly Come Dancing, and didn't really know who Caroline Flack was.
But you obviously have seen the fallout and the aftermath of this, and the English media are going into paroxysms over what should happen, who should be punished, whose fault it is, etc., etc., etc. There's currently a petition with something like 250,000 signatures wanting something to be done about social media and something to be done about the tabloid press. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I saw. Actually, it's more than 500,000 signatures on one of the petitions. There's two running. It was the lead story on nearly every newspaper yesterday. It's on the front pages with lots of pages inside today. It is one of those spasms that happens occasionally in which a lot of problems are concentrated on one particular figure and this tragic decision by this woman to take her own life. A blame game is being played. So some people are blaming the prosecutors for having gone ahead with the case against her. Some are blaming ITV, saying they failed to care for her. They are blaming the media for bullying, although they don't delineate here, importantly, between forms of media. So I think there's no doubt, because I've been researching it over the last 12 hours, that she suffered a lot of abuse. I don't know if it amounts to bullying, but a lot of abuse on social media. It's less clear that the media, the mainstream media, the tabloids, did much more than poke around in the way that they do into every celebrity's life. The difficulty here is we are told that she was a vulnerable and fragile person, and both the CRS, the prosecutors, should have known that, and the media should have stood back as well. I'm not certain, I can't see, and as I say, I come to it relatively new, I can't see any evidence that of vulnerability that the media could have known about and stepped back. And in fact, is it clear at all that they were culpable in that sense? I do think individuals on social media did appalling things, but then, to be honest, and I'm on social media, appalling things are said about me. It's how you cope with that. And I guess I'm not a vulnerable person.
So is that not the huge hypocrisy in all of this, Roy? A social media platform in and of itself doesn't do anything to anybody. It is the people who are on it and using it, which is punters like you, I, and everybody else who's on it. Those are the ones who are up there taking pot shots and saying nasty, vile, horrible things. So to turn around and say the platform is what did it is wrong. It's people. It's us. And
yes,
our insecurities and our horrible little, you know, bits of begrudgery that come out in us, or the fact that we're anonymous, so we can say what we like. We're having a bad day. I'm having a really shitty day here. And you know what? I'm going to take it out and I'm going to dump it on somebody else. And to moan about, because isn't her life great? Who does she think she is?
You're right. Of course you're right. It is. There are two sorts of hypocrisy here. First of all, there's cowardice. because a lot of these people hide behind pseudonyms, so you don't know who they are. So they're not even taking responsibility for what they're saying. The other amount of hypocrisy is that people who consume every jot and tittle about the private life of people like Caroline Flack are the ones who sign petitions saying that the tabloid should lay off. So that is a gross hypocrisy. It goes back to the way we treat members of the royal family, the way we've treated celebrities down the years, that everyone wants to know everything about them, but at the same time, they are not. They then attack the people who provide the information for them.
Yeah, there's another hypocrisy as well, too, which is, and look, you've been observing stories like this, and many of them have been tragic and have had tragic outcomes, but you've seen loads of them over the 25, 30, 35, 40 years that you've been observing. This, too, will pass. There will be outrage. There will be calls for draconian measures against these outlets. It won't happen. We'll all be on to something or someone else next week. And the only way it'll change is if it actually costs them money. And that would have, we would have to stop using it and buying their product. And that's not going to happen either.
No, you're absolutely right. Nothing will happen. I've been through these problems since the mid-1980s, when we had a massive set of stories here in the mid-80s in Britain. Celebrities having their private lives excavated, as did MPs. Big reviews, big inquiries. Another one after hacking, which of course was also amazingly intrusive into people's private lives. Not much happened, to be honest, if you look back. We've got the same kind of regulation of the press that we always had. No laws will be passed. No government ever wants to pass a privacy law, which is what the Caroline's Law appears to be.
OK, Roy, I'll tell you what, I'll leave you there and you might want to answer that phone call. I want to move to Harry McCann, who's the founder of Transter and Director of Digital Youth Council. Thank you very much for taking our call, Harry. You have no doubt that social media played a role in this woman's mental ill health. It certainly contributed to it. But you also feel that we can't simply blame the platforms. Why?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Mark. Look, obviously, it's very tragic and it was a very sad weekend, I think, for a lot of people. I think social media companies do have a responsibility and they do play a part from a sense that they allow a certain amount of anonymity online, which allows people to put these fake names and fake profiles together and have a say on things that are happening in the world and bully people who aren't necessarily being hidden or putting themselves out there. But we also have a responsibility. So Facebook, Twitter, Instagram are all just platforms. We provide them with the content. And as individuals, we all need to take a look at ourselves and go, what are we posting online and what content are we putting out there? And I think a lot of what has happened over the weekend, and I disagree, I suppose, with Roy in a sense, but I do think there will be change from individuals' point of view in the sense that, yes, the media may not change and, yes, the platforms may not change, but I'd hope that people will look at themselves and go, do you know what? Maybe it's time to be a little kinder.
Well, Harry, that's the point I want to make to you. That's the point I want to make to you, and I made it to Roy as well, that we can't get them to change unless we're prepared to change. And I, human nature being what it is, I can't see that happening. I really can't. It's people have grown up as digital natives. This is what they do. I'm not sure they even... I would think that there's a lot of people who post unpleasant or maybe not so nice things and they don't even realise it. They don't kind of go, Ash, it's no big deal. I'm not hurting anybody. I haven't hit them or anything. But they don't understand the power of the words. They don't see what they're doing as being malicious.
Yeah, and I think there's a certain amount of people thinking that the real world and the online world are two separate places, when in fact there is actually a no noticeable divide there. The people who are online are real people. They have real feelings. They have families. They have friends. And those words can impact those people. And I think it comes back a lot, and I've pushed for this over the years in the sense that we need to be starting from a young age in schools, teaching young people, teenagers and children, to understand that what they say and what they do online is the exact same as saying it to an individual or a person on the street. I also think it comes back, Mark, and it's a very important point here, is the media and the role the media played in this. And I think there's a big mistake to say that the media had no role here or to say or try to give them some cope out here. I looked at the Daily Mail today, and in the Daily Mail, one of the headlines was Caroline Flack, turbulent love life. After what happened at the weekend, they put a timeline together of all the relationships that Caroline Flack had during her life. and they felt that was appropriate this morning given what had happened over the weekend. So that was the news. And I think we need to start looking at what news we're consuming and what we consider to be news in media, because we all play a part in it. We're all clicking and grabbing at these pieces of information that we have no need to look at. There's absolutely no need to be involved in that aspect of their lives. The Daily Mail are a perfect example of The Sun, The Star, all of these individual papers and media outlets. There was pictures of her apartment up today. There was timelines of things that are just completely inappropriate and completely insensitive given the incidents over the weekend.
Okay, Harry, I absolutely agree with you, but you know what they will say in their defence? They will say that Caroline Flack was a very shrewd media operator. She had 2.5 million followers on Instagram or one of the platforms. She gave us these stories. She used her almost soap opera-like love life as a way of bolstering her profile, and she surfed that wave to prominence. It got her profile, it got her big jobs, and, you know, when you dance with the devil, you pay the tune. No, I'm not saying that's right, but I'm saying that's what their defence will be.
And I think that's a very sad outlook, and I think it's a very sad way to think about it.
But they'll say that's the game, and she knew what she was getting into.
And you know what? 3.6 million people watched Love Island Final in 2019, yet Caroline Flack still felt alone on Saturday and still felt in a situation where she had nobody to turn to.
Okay.
And those people think that she had something to benefit from that. Right. That's perfectly fine.
You've actually given me a perfect segue. By the way, we're joined by Harry McCann. That was Harry McCann you were listening to there, founder of Transistor, and also director of the Digital Youth Council, and Roy Greenslade, media commentator. But I'm also joined by Cindy O'Connor, who is an expert in this area, has been working at the Cliff Face for a very long time, director of Athena now, but formerly chief clinical officer with Pieta House for 13 years, and qualified in dealing with people who have these kinds of issues. And Harry's point there about her vulnerability and, you know, about the fact that she could be loved by so many people but still end up alone. If you look at what has happened to her, and if you even just a kind of an amateur psychological profile of her, you would say she is absolutely the wrong person to be in this kind of business and putting herself into this kind of spotlight. But still, she was driven to do it, and she had been driven to do it since she was a child.
Yeah, and was successful at it.
And very successful at it. Very successful at it. So there's like, how do we protect people like that from themselves?
Yeah. Well, just
can we?
Well, I think going back to the point that Roy made earlier on, when he said, you know, she obviously was vulnerable and that he's been stalked and harassed on social media, but he is not a vulnerable person. I think we have to be very mindful that we can all become vulnerable. If we get pushed that step too far, any one of us could find ourselves in a situation where we're feeling completely overwhelmed. And I think the difficulty with what happens in a scenario like this is that we know that when we are distressed, our ability to rationalise can become diminished. You know, and I have worked with hundreds of people who have attempted suicide, who would come in and talk about their suicidal ideation. And the reality of it is that most of those people, well, I would say all of those people that I worked with, would tell you that if they could see another option, they would choose life. But at that point, it's not that they actually want to take their life. It's just that they want to paint the pain to end, and they can't seem to find any other solution, which I can understand, because when we're in that emotional distress state, we're in the right-hand side of our brain, which is the emotional side of our brain, and it is much more difficult to access the rational and the logical side of the brain.
Yeah, I mean, I take your point about Roy saying, you know, he's tough as an old boot, and it's not the kind of thing that would get to him. But if you were getting it 400, 500, 1,000, 1,500, 2,000, 3,000 times
Absolutely.
A day, and you were engaging with it, and you're in that bubble, and it becomes your reality, and so many people are telling you that, you know, they don't like you, or you're awful, or you're fat, or your hair doesn't look great, or whatever the hell, and your image and what you do is defined by that, and it's being picked away, chipped away, then you'd want to be made of titanium not to be affected by it.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, for a lot of people, if I'm honest, I would have said even at one point in my own life, I would have felt that my identity was wrapped up in my career. You know, so when that's been chipped away at, there's also implications from a financial point of view for somebody if they lose their career. So I think it can be underestimated just the impact. And, you know, you're quite right, Mark, about social media and, you know, this image that's projected. Even if I've kind of done a little bit of research and had a little bit of look at Love Island, you know, they're beautiful people, beautiful bodies. It's very far removed from real life. And we're sending this message even to our young people that this is what's expected of you. This is how you're supposed to look and sound and be. And they're unrealistic expectations, you know. And certainly from what I've read in the media and from what I've heard, it sounds like there was definitely some vulnerabilities there for Caroline. But we all would know if there's trouble in a relationship, that can be stress. Who doesn't have difficulties in relationships? You know, like, none of us have a perfect life from A to Z. But I think when you're under that level of scrutiny, you know, the world and their wife knowing about your personal business and then been harassed on social media, you know, that can sometimes push somebody over the edge.
In terms of how you police something like that, look, it's not going to go away.
Yeah,
that genie
absolutely
is long since out of the bottle. We've raised now nearly two generations. Well, certainly one generation. They are digital natives. It's what they know. It's how they communicate. Yeah. It's where they live their lives. It's how they socially interact. It's where they go for jobs and how they advance their careers. So it isn't going to go away. How do we protect or prepare them for an onslaught? I mean, if they're successful and they end up like Caroline Flack with 2.5 million followers and something goes wrong and it's then public, you know, it's not like you've messed up in front of 20 people or 30
Absolutely.
People. You can go and move somewhere else or whatever, right? 2.5 million people, there's no escaping that. So, and it'll follow you everywhere. And more importantly, it follows you beyond your front door. It follows you home to your bedroom. How do you prepare and protect people from that?
I think we all have a responsibility as an individual as to how we treat other people. And there has to be a recognition that our words really, really do hurt people. I suppose one of the things that I'm really conscious of today, even Mark, is the fact that we know from research studies that if somebody, a celebrity, takes their life, we saw that in the aftermath of Robin Williams, that in the months following, there was a 10% increase in the rates of suicide in the United States. You know, so I think the key message that we need to get out here today is that help-seeking behaviour is what we want to see, and that's what we're encouraging. And from what I have read in the newspaper, apparently the 999 was called for Caroline the night before. One of the greatest predictors that somebody is going to die by suicide is the fact that they have already attempted. Now, I'm not too sure if it was an actual attempt, but apparently the services were a call to the door. And she had told people that she was going to take her life. And I think sometimes we can write this off as attention-seeking behaviour or as a way or a means of her avoiding the repercussions of what happened with the trial.
Now, I had read somewhere that if somebody says they're going to do it, it means that they're waving, they're not drowning, that they're looking for, it's a cry for help rather than I'm actually going to do it.
Well, if somebody tells us that they're going to take their life by suicide, we have to pay attention to that. You know, because, and this is what happens with people. I think the reality of it is, like, we don't go around every day thinking about who's going to take their life. So very often there's cues given to us, like, you know, people saying, I can't take this anymore, or I can't see any light at the end of the tunnel. And if we're not informed about suicide and the signs of suicide, we're not going to pick up on those cues.
Well, from a professional point of view, even observing at a distance, you've looked at this woman's life implode. You know, she's lost everything. She's lost her sponsors. She's lost her job. Her love life is, her partnership is wrecked. She's facing court. She's actually going to have to go back again and go through the whole thing. And there's a possibility she might end up in jail. You'd be worried about anybody in that situation.
Absolutely.
Let alone think that the worst might happen.
Absolutely. No matter how much resilience you have, I think basically it sounded like her world was falling apart. And that's at a point when we need to have somebody come in and offer the support that's needed. And I think for a lot of people, there's this perception that they're going to be able to navigate their way through the disaster or through what's going on in their life. And they keep pushing on their own sometimes to see if they can sort this out themselves. But instead, they're just going into a downward spiral.
Yeah, and that there again, the size and the reach of social media plays a huge part in that, isn't it? Because you're not talking about 10 or 15 or 20 people or even your local area or your local town because you can always move. If you're talking about millions of people know you and know the disaster that your life has become, you feel there's nowhere to hide.
Yeah. And
is that then how See, that's another thing I don't quite understand, because I'm from a generation where suicide happened, obviously, but it was absolutely the last resort. Now it seems to be one of the options. And I never understood how it got to that stage.
Yeah. And I think you're right, Mark. Like, if you look back to, you know, 1980s, suicide was barely spoken about. You know, people were reluctant to speak about it. They were covered up. There was a huge amount of shame attached to it, stigma attached to it. But definitely, I think with this generation, that it's so much out there, it's in their world, that they do consider it an option. Mm. But at the same time, I think...
But it's not an option. And it's important to say it is not an option.
Absolutely. And I think one of the positive messages that we can give here today is that the rates of suicide in this country have come down. You know, so we are seeing help-seeking behaviour. The rates of suicide are reducing. And I'm not, you know, kind of glossing over those figures, because I know behind every one of those statistics, there's a face, there's a family, and, you know, there's heartache and heartbreak. But we are reducing the rates of suicide. And the only way to do that, I think, as well, is to make sure that our young people speak out in time, rather than thinking that they're going, rather than leaving themselves to the point of crisis.
Okay. Cindy O'Connor, director of Athena, and also Roy Greenslade, and Harry McCann, founder of Transtar, and the director of the Digital Youth Council. Thank you all very much indeed. I hope, God forbid that anybody who's listening to us at the moment is feeling like that, but I hope if you are, it's given you pause for thought. Remember, it is absolutely not an option. It's a very permanent solution to what could be a very temporary problem. I know that sounds trite and cliched, but, you know, there's almost nothing that can't be solved with a bit of love and time and effort and energy and talking and, you know, somebody to say, well, actually, you know what? You're not the only person. I've been there and I know how I can help you. And, of course, one of the best organisations that you can go to if you find yourself thinking like that is the Samaritans, which, of course, you can ring on free phone 116123. That's free phone 116123.